C3 Radio aus dem Zentrum für internationale Entwicklung. Am 30. Mai 2023 hat im C3 Zentrum für internationale Entwicklung ein Symposium zum folgenden Thema stattgefunden: Will Universal Basic Income Really Change the World? Global Evidence on Basic Income. In der heutigen Ausgabe von C3 Radio berichten wir darüber. Es begrüßt Sie Jürgen Planck. Der Hintergrund zum Thema: Experimente mit der Auszahlung eines bedingungslosen Grundeinkommens wurden bereits in so unterschiedlichen Ländern wie Kenia, Finnland, Namibia, Indien und Kanada durchgeführt. In den USA wurden Varianten des bedingungslosen Grundeinkommens in der frühen zweiten Hälfte des 20. Jahrhunderts diskutiert, unter anderem dank Martin Luther King Jr. und Milton Friedman. Das im ÖGB Verlag erschienene Buch »Sinnvoll tätig sein – Wirkungen eines Grundeinkommens« beschreibt die Ergebnisse eines im Waldviertel ausbezahlten bedingungslosen Grundeinkommens an Langzeitarbeitslose. Einige der Empfängerinnen haben sich selbstständig machen können, die meisten haben sich nicht mehr vom AMS gegängelt gefühlt. In der Schweiz wurde im Jahr 2016 über ein bedingungsloses Grundeinkommen abgestimmt. Ergebnis: 23,1% haben zugestimmt. In der Hauptstadt Bern haben sogar 40% Ja dazu gesagt. Ein häufig genannter Einwand dagegen lautet: Ein bedingungsloses Grundeinkommen sei nicht finanzierbar. Kaum jemand würde mehr arbeiten. Dadurch fiele kaum Einkommenssteuer an. Eine repräsentative Umfrage zeigt allerdings, dass nur 2% aufhören würden zu arbeiten. Ein weiterer Aspekt zum Thema: Seit Anfang der 2000er Jahre sind gezielte Bargeldtransfers ein heiß diskutiertes Thema in Politikkreisen, insbesondere aufgrund des Erfolgs von Programmen wie dem brasilianischen Bolsa Familia. In jüngerer Zeit hat sich die Debatte auf das Potenzial des bedingungslosen Grundeinkommens als alternative Maßnahme verlagert, das einen effektiveren und würdevollen Ansatz für Sozial- und Entwicklungspolitik und für eine gerechte und nachhaltige Lösung in Bezug auf Armut und Ungleichheit bieten könnte. Ein Experte ist aus Hyderabad, Indien, zum Symposium nach Wien gekommen. Der Soziologe Sarath Davala ist zurzeit Vorsitzender des Basic Income Earth Network, kurz BN, das seit dem Jahr 1986 besteht. Und er leitet das Work-Free Basic Income Pilot Project mit Müllsammlerinnen in Hyderabad. Ich frage Sarath Davala, inwiefern ein Universal Basic Income die Welt verändern würde und welches Ziel sich das Basic Income Earth Network gesteckt hat.
The world is changing now, but it is changing in a direction that we are disturbed about. So you have all kinds of utopias. There is a neoliberal utopia, there is a nationalistic utopia, there is a fundamentalist utopia, there is a jihadist utopia. So when people are being dragged into those utopias, we should have a basic income utopia, basic income society as a dream, and we should push as much as we can, and we should push the world in that direction. So that is the mission of our BN, Basic Income Earth Network, of which I'm the chair. So we are trying to, our mission in the next 10-year ambition and mission is to open conversations in every country in the world, each of the 226 or 230 countries. Yeah, it will change the world. I believe in that strongly.
So the discussion is also in Europe going on for a while, and I followed the discussions, and it's an ongoing process. How long will it take till it becomes reality instead of a utopia?
An idea like basic income comes, and with its five characteristics I just said, that individual, cash, unconditional, universal, and periodic, that idea actually comes and starts interrogating the existing ways of doing things. So this is a new way of thinking and doing society and doing development, or whatever you want to call. So it will cause a tension in the conversation, and then it interrogates the, okay, I propose that this is the outcome I want from this idea, that my goal is not poverty alleviation. My goal is not fixing the problem of poverty. My goal is to strengthen human dignity and human freedom. That is my goal. And basic income, I believe, is going to do that. So are your programs doing that? In Europe, for example, if you take the welfare system is for the exceptions. If you are mentally ill, you can't work, or if you are unemployed, and so the whole system. So to enter into a welfare system is like entering into a hospital because you're ill and you have to be treated and you have to get out of the hospital. You don't have to, you shouldn't stay in the hospital. So in the hospital, if you are doing things like things that are not supposed to be done in the hospital, you're penalized. So in Holland, I just interviewed a person on stage in front of like 50, 60 people. I interviewed for about 45 minutes a welfare recipient. And the whole picture that comes out is that the way you penalize, the way you want to control, the way you... So you're, as a society, what kind of human beings are we trying to produce? We are trying to produce slaves. We're not trying to produce human beings for human thriving. So we have to change. I think today, if you look at nature, it is getting damaged and destroyed. You see the human body, the food we eat, the kind of food we eat, the kind of drug industry, the drugs we take. So all these things are under a threat. So I see that a new society, new ways of doing things is a necessity rather than a utopia.
Alaska gilt als einzige Region weltweit, in der alljährlich ein bedingungsloses Grundeinkommen an jeden Bürger und jede Bürgerin ausbezahlt wird, gespeist aus den Erdöleinkommen dieses US-Bundesstaates. Die niedrigste Auszahlung im Jahr 1984 betrug $331, im Jahr 2015 wurden $2,072 ausbezahlt.
What I found interesting in the morning sessions was that people in Africa would gather their basic income that they get, save it up for a couple of months, and then invest it into some small business or into some goat or whatever. In Alaska, people would take more drugs.
Yeah, accidental mortality.
More accidents.
So when they get the money, there's an accident.
Yeah. So what does this say about Africa? What does this say about US, maybe, about Western so-called Western civilization, about so-called African societies? How would you discuss that?
I mean, when we give a basic income in our pilots also, there is always, first 3 months, there is a euphoria. But that euphoria lasts not more than 3 months. And then you start, the psychological effects start taking over. And then you start planning. And then you start being very conservative. So we should not underestimate the moral capacity of a human being. That people who do wrong, they feel guilty and then try to compensate it. So there is always this pendulum of wrong and the right. What I believe as the wrong and the right, if I do too excess of wrong, the balance tilts towards the right. So it is maintaining that balance is the human moral balance. So just because this kind of data is there, which I would still like to see what kind of data it is about, the accidents have increased, the drugs have increased and all that. But if you see addictions and substance abuse as a product of the current pathologies of our society, they come from the structure. The structure, the way we have organized our society is the problem. And crime and all this is basically an offshoot of that. They are the symptoms of the pathology of the society. Now, then you have to think, so you will start seeing all these things separately. I mean, I would like to do one day, I would like to do a pilot project with maybe 20 pure alcoholics and give them a basic income for 3 years and see what happens. What does it do to your soul? I mean, there is a soul. What does it do to your moral universe? I mean, then won't you start questioning? Won't you want to, I should also thrive like everyone else? Will that desire not be awakened in that person? I would really like to do, that is my next target, to do that next thing to. So we should start looking at a human being from the lens of trust and not from the lens of mistrust. Now, when there is mistrust, you want to control. But when there is trust, you want to love. Don't create systems of control. The system, welfare system you have created, You treat us like beggars. Don't do that, please. Treat us like human beings. We're also human. People who are in need are also human beings. They have a moral capacity. They have a moral universe. Don't infantilize them or criminalize them. And don't look down. So these are our pleas to the governments and systems that you have to interrogate yourself. What was the question of the Alaska example you gave? Basic income will reduce poverty. That is not the original purpose of basic income. If I give unconditional love to my child, the child will perform well in college. Okay? But I'm not giving unconditional love to the child to perform. You see? That is not my goal. My goal is to give unconditional love to you because you are my child. But I would like to expand in my worldview. I would like to bring this unconditional love you want to give in the private domain. I want to bring it to the public square. Can we give unconditional love? Basic income, unconditional basic income is unconditional love, period, on a scale. So can we give that kind of a caring treatment to people? Then I think even the drug addictions will come down. Even the alcoholism will come down. Even all the pathologies we see. So we are treating the symptoms, we are not treating the disease.
Inwiefern würde sich, so frage ich Sarah Zdavala, die Sicht auf Arbeit durch die Einführung eines bedingungslosen Grundeinkommens verändern? Etwa in Indien, wo Formen von moderner Sklaverei und Schuldknechtschaft durchaus gegeben sind.
If you saw in that presentation I made, the one set of people who were most angry with the project were the moneylenders. And you have seen that people are doing more of their own cultivation and less of wage labor, which means that it's likely to be a wage labor shortage in the labor market. Okay, who do you think will be angry? The landlords who own the land. Okay, and landlords and moneylenders are the same most of the time. So the landlord will lend the money advance and expect the worker to work for him for 6 months or 3 months or whatever contract that is. Without getting paid, you're just repaying your loan. Well, so the objections that come about basic income are often are coming from the landlords, which is, if you see the world, if I can take the liberty to generalize, if you see the world is made of, you can clearly see, it's invisible, you can see that it's made of masters and slaves, slaves who work for the masters. And the goals are of masters. The outcome that they want is master's output. The plantation belongs to the output. In the olden days, it was the plantation. Today, it is the country. So the whole notion of paid work is designed to serve the purpose of the master. So the nation, countries are producing through their systems more slaves to comply. So you see, there is paid labor. But you see the work done by women? It's all unpaid labor. Yeah? I would call it your stealing labor. That is your stealing labor. And calling it culture, love, and all that bullshit. So we have to decouple work. We have to decouple work and income. Unless we do that, you end up remaining a slave. And you retain the slavish mentality. You will never be free. We have to unslave ourselves, de-slave ourselves, whatever. That whole slavish mentality that is taught to us, to obey. That is your job. So that's why law and order. So law and order is not just about crime. Law and order is about at the workplace you have to do this. We have to completely look at work in a different way. I would like to see 100 years from now or 50 years from now, robots become our slaves. In which case it is not bad. Robot never gets tired, except as long as you give solar energy, it's permanent. Robots should become our slaves and all individuals, all human beings should become the so-called masters. But then to be a master of a robot is very different. Robot is there to just do. So I'm not threatened by that. So we should have a system where everybody gets a basic income. You have a choice to do this work or that work. It's an optional thing. And then you get all your basics met because artificial intelligence is there. Because we can lead a prosperous life with the existing wealth we have.
Die Datenbanken, die die Computerprogramme der künstlichen Intelligenz stützen, werden in asiatischen Billiglohnländern mit Daten gefüttert. Und zwar von Menschen, die über Stunden Bilder beschlagworten oder markieren. Inwiefern setzt sich im Computerzeitalter die Ausbeutung von Arbeitskräften in einem neuen Feld einfach fort? Dazu Sawat Dawala.
And that's what last 30, 40 years, that's what has been happening, that the entire production systems are kind of shifting all over. The new business models are all about flexible manufacturing operations to shift all over the world. Well, see, it happens in concentric circles. Like in a small scale, it's happening in every house through the gender division of labor. Okay, so if you are talking about Austria or Germany versus Bangladesh, where they have shifted all the dirty jobs to them. In the gender division of labor, we have shifted all the dirty jobs to women. I mean, looking after a child, there's a lot of love there, but there's a lot of work, a lot of labor there. This is about power. So it's about power. If you have power, you not only each time convert the other person into a slave, whom you can, you also create a structure and a society, a whole society around it, that slave actually thinks, believes that it's good to be a slave. So basic income, in my view, benefits most the one who most needs it, the people who are disabled, the people who, particularly women. We saw in our pilot project, we found that women were the biggest beneficiaries of this whole system, because for the first time they have opened a bank account. For the first time they are operating, they think they have their own money.
Beim Basic Income gehe es nicht um Geld, sagt Sawat Davala in einem Schlüsselsatz.
It's not about money. It is what the money is symbolizing.
Diana Baschur ist ebenfalls beim Basic Income Earth Network. Sie forscht an der Uni Wien und befasst sich in ihrer Keynote mit dem folgenden Thema. Is there a case for basic income in post-conflict countries?
And so what I propose is to include a basic income for peace. It would be a tool that would complement traditional peace-building efforts. And the idea would be to channel some of the reconstruction funds directly to the population in the form of a basic income. As we've seen, this tool is universal, individual, unconditional, regular, and in cash format. And it has key differences with cash transfer programs that are widely implemented across the UN programs. And also, we've also seen in what ways a basic income is different from a cash transfer. When a basic income is distributed individually and conditionally and universally, it's been shown to create basic economic security for the individual. When this happens, the mental bandwidth expands, people start to think differently and think beyond the day-to-day survival mode. And when they're able to meet their basic needs in this way, they start also to think how they can improve their own livelihoods by engaging in productive activities. At the household level, decision-making also becomes more inclusive as every person becomes an income-generating individual. So with this, people have had personal resilience. So with personal resilience, people's mental and physical health improved and their financial stress decreased. And with this, we have something that is called the feedback effect, whereby as people become healthier and, for example, perform better at school, children perform better at school, public expenditures on these basic services becomes efficient. And so this is very important when we're trying to value the benefits of a basic income. First off, we have a general decrease in inequality. Because the basic income is distributed in an equal value to everyone, it is naturally more valuable to the poorer segments of the society than the more well-off. We've seen in the pilot that people start engaging more positively with the community, a process of common decision-making, of pooling resources, and social cohesion improved. As the basic income enables people to meet their basic needs, it immediately appeases their deprivation. So in terms of an engine for economic growth, in Namibia, we've seen self-employment increase by 300% after the introduction of the basic income in the pilot there. The multiplier effect I referred to, we've seen up to 2.6 times the multiplier effect. So the one unit of currency injected in the economy created 2.6 times its value. This is pretty, pretty impressive numbers.
Das Geld wurde zum Teil auch für gemeinschaftliche Projekte eingesetzt, etwa für den Ausbau einer Dorfstraße. Das hat die Solidarität in der Gemeinschaft erhöht. Und wie wird ein Grundeinkommen etwa auf UN-Ebene diskutiert?
I'm really happy to say that there is increasing interest in this tool. We have here a list of countries where it's been considered or a pilot is currently in the making. So Afghanistan had the UN country team there agreed a targeted basic income 2 years ago. In Iraq, I worked with UNIDO on a pilot feasibility studies also 2 years ago. In Sudan, the World Bank started a basic income project, but it had to be stopped because of the political upheavals. Nepal, so CEREC is actually working on a UNDP pilot proposal there. And at our Congress, annual Congress at Vienna 2 years ago, we had a panel of six UN agencies, the World Bank and IMF, speak in favor of the basic income. So I'm quite happy that this has been discussed more and more.
Zusammenfassend sagt Diana Bashur.
We have a tool that can restore livelihoods, improve people's resilience and their dignity. It awards agency to the vertical stigmatization. It has the potential to jumpstart the local economy, strengthen social cohesion, renew the social contract. It is also quite efficient, given the multiplier and feedback effects. Its challenges relate to security consideration, availability of services and infrastructure, the question of market functionality and financing, as well as the local acceptability question of the basic income. There are some institutional considerations that I would draw the attention to, maybe the first set. And here, this is the question of how donors perceive cash.
So Diana Bashur von der Uni Wien. In Österreich haben sogenannte Superreiche bereits deponiert, dass sie mehr Steuern bezahlen möchten, die Ärmeren zugutekommen könnten. Warren Buffett hat schon zu Lebzeiten Milliarden an die Bill Gates Stiftung gespendet. Ich frage Sawat Dawala, ob aus seiner Sicht das Mindset von Politikerinnen ein Grundeinkommen verhindert.
Yeah, it's the mindset which all of us have to engineer change. You want to engineer change. You have identified something as a problem. Suppose my friend sneezes. I say that take a pill for your sneezes. But if I know that sneezes are symptoms of something else, I will give medicine for that. So Bill Gates is running projects all over the world with his money, okay? But then they are replicating the old models of mistrust, of engineering change, fixing problems. But when will you give that freedom that you have to an ordinary person? And I'm also saying that give that freedom to an alcoholic and let us see what he's going to do. I'm saying give it that freedom to, you know, I'm working with a dozen transgender persons who are doing sex work. So we are giving an unconditional basic income and then running care workshops. So the point is that there should be a disruption of the way you do things. Even you have all good intentions. I'm saying everybody has good intentions. But then you are what Albert Einstein said, that you cannot solve a problem by using the same tools that created it. There should be a disruption. Unless there is a disruption, and that's why I'm saying that basic income is not an economic policy. Basic income is not a poverty alleviation policy. Basic income is not about income. Basic income is about trust and unconditional love. It's about relationships. It's a whole new way of looking at life. It's a whole new way of looking at policy, people, state, and citizens. So it happens to be people, when they reduce it to, where is the money going to come from? When you reduce to that question, that is, the question doesn't have an answer. It has an answer, but outside the system. Then I'll come and ask you, what are you doing with your minerals? And whom did you give a contract to? And how did that contract go? And what is the revenue that is coming from? And what is the ratio between the contract money and the license money and the revenue? And where is that revenue going? Let me put everything on the table. Let's talk. I mean, that is the conversation we want to facilitate. In every society, in every country, we have to do it. Just as much as in Japan, as in Austria, as in India. Because we are all part of the industrial society, industrial way of thinking. We have reduced human beings also into machines. We have to rehumanize human beings and start looking at human beings as human beings and say, human beings' basic needs are not food, clothing, and shelter. That is true of all mammals, all birds, everything, the entire nature. But human beings are a species where you say that their basic needs are dignity, freedom, and equality. Do the programs based on those assumptions. Then you will do the program in a very different way. So Bill Gates giving billions of dollars, if he can disrupt this mindset and do it differently, then all that money is welcome. If he's not doing that, that money is also just promoting and creating the same. It is strengthening the same muscles that the earlier system was creating. Strengthening. That doesn't impress me.
Das war C3 Radio. Heute zum Symposium Will universal basic income really change the world? Global Evidence on Basic Income, das am 30. Mai 2023 im C3 Zentrum für internationale Entwicklung in der Sensengasse 3 stattgefunden hat. Abschließende Hinweise. Informationen zum Basic Income Earth Network und zu dessen Kongress von 23. bis 26. August 2023 in Seoul findet man auf basicincome.org. Für Österreich informiert man sich auf www.grundeinkommen.at. Auf grundeinkommen.ch wird unter anderem die Finanzierbarkeit eines Grundeinkommens dargelegt. C3 Radio gibt es wieder in einem Monat auf Radio Orange 94.0 und als Podcast auf Spotify. Wer sich über das Thema Grundeinkommen informieren möchte, kann dazu auch in der C3-Bibliothek recherchieren. Zu deren Öffnungszeiten und zu allen Angeboten im C3 siehe www.zentrum3.at. Folgen Sie der ÖFSE und C3 Radio bitte auch auf Facebook. Auf Wiederhören sagt Jürgen Planck. C3 Radio aus dem Zentrum für internationale Entwicklung. Mit den Organisationen Baobab, Frauensolidarität, Mattersburger Kreis, ÖFSE und Paulo Freire Zentrum. Weitere Informationen und Podcast auf www.zentrum3.at.